I welcome you back to our program as we continue talking about getting in touch with the inner self, getting in touch with the healer within, as it were, and we're going to be talking with Dr. Eric Pearl. He is the author of The Reconnection, Healing Others, Healing Yourself. And Dr. Eric Pearl, welcome to our program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's good to have you. And, of course, in this full hour that we are having you in the second half of our program, we're talking about connecting, and you're talking about reconnecting. And in the first half, we talked about just flat-out connecting with that inner voice, that intuitive voice that guides us along. Many of us, myself included, have really worked, I don't know that it's necessarily hard, at listening to the body, listening to my body, and trying to do the right things to help it to be healthy, so that I guess one of my biggest concerns as I have grown over the years is I've watched some of the men. We have a place called Sun City out here in Phoenix, out in the West Valley. And I watch some of these men who are walking around with canes and they're hunched over with that big old hump, and I'm going, I do not want to be one of those guys. And so I'm trying, and I've been trying since about 15, 17 years of age to do the right things. That's not to say that I have, and that's kind of where I want to start us off in terms of reconnecting. What is the connection that we have lost that you are wanting to encourage us through your book to regain?
Well, the connection we're speaking of in this case is our original connection, or shall I say the connection to our original fullness with the universe. I mean, let me give you the background in short. I was a chiropractor, and in my 12th year in practice, a few odd events happened, and the next thing I know, lamps and televisions and computers are turning themselves off and on and off and on around me, and patients start telling me that they're seeing angels and being spoken to by hearing different voices, and my palms blistered a few times, as you know, and then actually bled once, not like a stigmata, but you know, as if you maybe stick your palm with a pin or a needle, that little bit of blood that comes out and doesn't really go anywhere, but there it is. And the next thing we know, bones are untwisting on people with birth deformed legs, and people are getting up out of wheelchairs, not all of them, but some of them, enough that it seemed to have gotten the scientific world interested, and soon as, you know, people would say, what did you do? I'd say, nothing, and don't tell anyone, and that went over about as big as Nancy Reagan's just say no to drugs policy. Soon everyone started coming in saying, I'll have, you know, I'll have what she had. And the next thing we know, actually, University of Arizona, out in your way, sort of, and some other universities had extended invitations for research, and they started seeing some very unusual things. They had, you know, I mean, we've had parts of healing here before. We've had Reiki and Derange and Shin and Qigong, and those are energy healing, sort of individual subsets of energy healing, not the full spectrum of energy healing, but subsets. And suddenly, with this connection that we have, which we can talk about what it might have been originally, we seem to be getting in a fuller spectrum of healing, which takes it way beyond energy healing into healing with light and information, to use two precise words that actually came through with this.
I find it interesting, as we discuss this, that there are so many different modalities. You just, you know, you described a few of them to start with, and that I would venture a guess that there are as many modalities, quite honestly, or at least variations on all of these different modalities, as there are people on the planet, because, well, let's see, we're all different. And so what energy healing would work on one, and I'm just curious, you really don't have the kind of control over this healing power that, say, a doctor has, a surgeon has, with, say, the scalpel.
Well, that's actually sort of a loaded question.
Okay.
I mean, because the fact is that, no, of course, I don't have control over this. How, considering what it is, God, love, or universe, you know, source, creator, pick the word you want, who are we to have control over that? Now, when you make a comparison to, for instance, a medical doctor, I mean, let's face it, you break a bone, the medical doctor puts the two ends of the bones together. You you know, you have surgery, and afterwards the medical doctor connects the two pieces of the skin over it. But who's doing the healing
right
after that? It's actually the same source.
Okay.
And actually, the medical doctor has no more control over that than anyone else. I mean, we are... There are so many professions in the healing arts, just the recognized, you know, straighter healing arts, medicine, chiropractic, acupuncture, psychiatry, psychology, physical therapy, that all the practitioner truly can do is influence in a certain direction, whether it's psychological, whether it's chemical, whether it's physical, influence something, introduce the force, shall we say, in the higher form of the word or the presence of their direction. And then if we are truly the healers that all of us who are doctors would like to be, then we know that we must then, and the sooner the better, step out of the picture and allow the power that made the body to heal the body.
So we need to become, as I've heard the phrase, a part of the process and not try to control the process.
Yeah, isn't that a kicker?
and now
there was a wonderful chiropractic philosopher who used to say to the doctors, stop being the doctor and start being the healer, because it's our essence and our consciousness that we carry into a process, which is our first step for anyone. Forget yet evolving to the level of bringing in the reconnective healing frequencies, and just whatever we are doing, if we simply allow our essence and our consciousness to precede us into the room and to remain there a little bit after we leave, that's the best we can do for anyone. Then it's up to us to determine how much of that healing is coming, or to allow for as much of that healing process in our consciousness as we can bring through.
My wife and I are both master Reiki masters, third level, and we had an interesting experience ourselves, and this was the way it was taught to us as far as the process, that you do not go in with necessarily an intent to achieve a given result.
Absolutely.
You send the energy and allow the individual to choose. And we did this for my father's brother who was had terminal cancer. And it would have been wonderful to say, you know, we sent this energy and it healed him and so on and so forth. Actually, what happened was it gave him the energy to get up out of his wheel, actually to wheel across the compound where he and his family lived to his son's house and go over and say and do the things he needed to do. And then he had enough energy to actually throw his medication against the wall. He'd had enough. But to finish whatever business he felt like he needed to finish before he transitioned, as we kind of put that. And so we got out of the way, and we just let the process be. And it was a really an extraordinary... I mean, we didn't find out until a few days later about what had happened.
And that's exactly what we talk about. Even in the book, in The Reconnection, the last... chapter, one of the last chapters is called What is Healing? And in it is a story of a wonderful couple. I was brought in by an oncologist who brought me in very, very late on this case. And, you know, everything else they had done hadn't worked. And he said, would you please come tonight? So after I had closed my office, it was late at night, I went to the hospital. And I walked into the room, and the husband was sitting there in a chair, and the woman who had cancer, multiple myeloma, it was riddled throughout her body, was in the bed. And so I was trying to be very quiet because she was apparently sleeping, and she woke up. And as soon as I started to work a little bit, even though it's off the body, she woke up and was very friendly. You could see how much in love they were with one another. It was one of those special couples, that rare love that just, you know, lights up the room and affects everyone else who's in the room with them. And so what happened was as we talked, they sort of brought me into their life. I mean, she was you know, completely lucid. Mm-hmm. Conversation was beautiful, and they were telling us about their friends and their stories and skiing trips that they had gone on and recipes and all sorts of things. They were funny. They were loving. I would say they were probably in their mid-30s. And at a certain point, she got this kick where she just had to have three different kinds of ice cream from that had to come from two different stores. And it was cold and it was wintry, but the husband was, you know, thrilled to get it for her. And he put on his coat and to get ready to leave. And she also wanted a special cheesecake from somewhere, so he agreed to go there too. And I, you know, should have left by then because of my timing, but I said that I would wait because I knew it would take at least 45 minutes. For him to get out of the hospital compound and all the way out to the places and back again if he was going full speed. So he walked out the door and I resumed the conversation with the woman who looked at me through an entirely different set of eyes and said, "I'm leaving now." I said, "What?" She says, "I'm going to leave now." I said, "Oh, no, you're not." Because, you know, the last thing I needed was for this man to come back with three types of ice cream and a cheesecake in his arms and see me sitting there next to his dead wife.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes everything isn't completely altruistic.
I gotcha, yeah.
And so I talked to her and talked to her because by keeping her in conversation, I knew I could keep her present. And it was the longest 45 minutes of my life. And finally, the husband returned, mm-hmm. with all the bags of food and everything. And she resumed the conversation just like she was the same person that she was before. Friendly and bubbly, no talk about what had just gone on.
Okay.
And he wanted, you know, he offered me some ice cream, and I really wasn't very hungry, let's face it, at that point. I just wanted to get out. Mm-hmm. And so I thanked him much, made an excuse, and I left, and I went home. Now, I spoke with the oncologist the next day, and she transitioned that evening.
Mm.
She did. What I didn't know was she didn't just wake up from a nap. She hadn't been conscious except for a rare moment or two for the previous few months. As we began the session, she came back into not just a mild consciousness that she'd had for moments here or there. She came back into the full person that she had been, the woman that he was in love with.
Wow.
That where he was, what was the healing that went on here if she died? The healing was that he got to spend time for the last time, but real time, with the woman that he had married and spent all that time loving. The healing was that she was able to give that release so that she knew she was finally able to let go. Healing isn't always, as you know, coming back to life. And the point is that healing shouldn't and won't take us out of our cycle.
Yeah.
We are here to recycle and come back and learn and return and move on in, you know, in our spiritual development.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to tell you that I used to work, I worked for almost 15 years at a religious radio station, and I was also born legally blind. And I won't go into an enormous amount of detail other than to say that I would produce programs for many of the programmers there, and many of them were, you know, faith healers. They, you know, pray, lay hands, and so forth. And at the end of one of the programs, the woman came into the control room where I was wrapping up what I was doing, and she says, "I want to lay hands on you. I want to heal your vision. I want, you know," and so forth. And at that moment, it kind of dawned on me, at least for myself. Now, this isn't for everyone. And I said, "I appreciate your offer, and I understand the philosophy and the theology and so forth, and God knows where I am, and when he wants to turn my vision into 20/20 or what have you," because I felt that restoring it would actually turn it backwards because it wasn't that great when I was born, and I had a bunch of surgeries and so forth. So I said, "I appreciate it, but see, my purpose in this life isn't to be healed. My purpose in this life is to do what I'm doing," and in the case of the broadcasting. Because I really felt, and still do, that that's sort of my purpose on Earth, not to have 20/20 vision. And I respectfully thanked her. I said, I appreciate that. You may pray for me, and I can't stop you from doing that. But
would you want to?
No. Oh, absolutely not.
Well, sometimes when you say, "I can't stop you from doing it," it often means, "I really wish you wouldn't, but I guess I can't stop you."
Yeah, exactly.
That's not the same thing as you're welcome to pray for me, or that's great and I appreciate it.
Right. But it was an interesting insight for me that I got in touch with, because I'd heard so many on the different religious programs back in the 80s, and it was the same people every week who were calling into these programs, and they all have their healing, their illnesses, their ailments, their diseases for whatever reasons. But I was doing pretty doggone. There were people who were astounded at what I was doing with the legal blindness that I had, and I thought, why do I want to mess that up? I'm doing
right.
pretty
well,
good.
Let's talk about what you're saying, because I mean,
okay.
for one thing, you know, Sylvia Brown, who's, you know, it's not like I would always quote Sylvia Brown,
mm-hmm.
but she said something once that was both funny and very real.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people sit there saying, God, why haven't you answered my prayers? And Sylvia said, He has. He said no.
Yeah.
Now, right. Now, let's move beyond that, though, because I find it very interesting that you took it to the step of, if God wants me to have a healing, I will.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is part of what I teach in the seminars. I mean, how can I teach, like the seminars we're going to be, you know, bringing in Arizona. God, I'm doing about 45 seminars a year.
Wow.
With this, God, we spoke at Madison Square Garden not too long ago. Anyway, let's go back to the point. What we talk about is, let's say you're the healing practitioner. A person is on the table to lie down to have a healing. Are you required? The fact is, if someone comes to me, if God, for some reason, God, love, universe, pick your word, wants this person to have a healing at a certain point in time, you're not going to hear the voice of God booming out going, so where is that Dr. Pearl when you need him?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
God wants someone to have a healing, you're going to have a healing.
Right.
So why, then, do the healings tend to occur oftentimes when a third person is present? Well, I believe that it's for us to recognize and learn that there's more, that there's power in the number of three, you know, one, two, three, you, the person on the table, and you know, and God and love and whatever
mm-hmm.
word you want.
Right.
Coming together, becoming the power of one. There's a process in our recognizing, in our consciousness, and in our seeing, an actual vision that if a healing, that healings can take place this way, that wherever two or more are gathered, not to sound overly religious, that we can help one another evolve to a new level of physical health, consciousness, or anything else, because once this hits mass consciousness, we can bring healing to an everyday event, which doesn't make it anything less of a miracle. It just makes it more commonly occurring miracle, so we stop thinking of it as
mm-hmm.
a miracle, just like we don't think of it every time we flip a light switch that it's a miracle, but it would seem that way for someone from the 1700s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Well, and the other thing, too, that I thought of without, again, going too much into the religious, that being surrounded by this in this environment for 15 years, I used to be amazed at how amazed they were at what Jesus did, but I'll bet you Jesus wasn't all that amazed. It's like, that's just what
that's
I do.
Right.
It was natural.
That's it exactly. You know, and let's not go back into the problem. There becomes a huge problem when we start going back into the Bible,
mm-hmm.
you know,
oh,
because
yeah.
because what happens especially around healing, you know, two Christians, three opinions
yes.
in this particular arena. Well, you know, they say two Jews, three opinions, but that's political.
Okay.
Here, we're talking about healing.
Yes.
You know, let's face it. Jesus was the first to say, these things that I shall do, you shall do, and more.
And more.
You know, and more. So it should be an open thing. But the fact is that people who are open to the concept of healing are, and people who aren't. And we could spend a lot of this time together trying to talk to the 10% of the people who are just going to close their eyes and their ears to any evidence, scientific or otherwise, that says that you can do this. I think what's probably most beneficial for the people who are listening is to recognize that there is a new level that we can attain of this healing.
Mm-hmm.
Where what we've been bringing in, as I said before, were subsets of subsets. You, most, we had part of energy healing. It's like, let's look at the alphabet and say, well, you've got consonants and vowels, you know,
mm-hmm.
so those are two subsets. And then you've got, you know, all the little consonants individually. You've got seven vowels, let's say. So those are subsets of the vowel subset. We've had subsets of the reggae subset here, mm-hmm. for instance, or Jinshin or Shigong, mm-hmm. which were coming from the energy healing portion. And the researchers, of all the strangest people in the world, were the ones to say that they feel that these new, more comprehensive reconnective healing frequencies are here for the very first time. I said, how can you say that? How could you even possibly forget knowing it? How could you even theorize it? And they explained it with two very common things that I think we both know, and yet people don't put them together. And they were, one, that we were raised, of course, being told we were three-dimensional beings, right?
Yeah.
All the way up until the year 1999, science said we were three-dimensional. In 1999, they said we were 3D plus. That lasted for 1 year. And finally, they stepped up to the plate in 2000 and acknowledged that we were four-dimensional beings, just what Einstein and others have been saying all along. And it wasn't that we grew a new dimension. We recognized a dimension that we didn't recognize because it didn't look like height, width, and depth. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
And that fourth dimension is time.
Yeah.
So we are height, width, depth, and time. We are existing in a four-dimensional existence among all the dimensions of the universe, which in essence, I guess for not a perfect but the best analogy we can come up with, it's like we're sort of, you know, fenced in or boxed in or behind the veil that allows us to experience a four-dimensional life or existence. Think of it like maybe being inside of a four-sided box, let's say.
Yeah.
And a given box has a given capacity. You know, your shoebox won't hold your Volkswagen.
That's true.
But part two comes along, and what are we now recognizing yet? That time is expanding. The phrase they say is time is moving faster, but as you study it, you see, you think of faster as it went by so fast you didn't have time for anything much. What's really happening is that it's expanding. So if time is one of those four sides of our dimensional existence, and time begins to expand, our capacity to receive more within our container, let's say, expands as well. And now we're not doing just energy healing any longer. We find out that the spectrum of healing glides from energy and includes, then picks up and becomes light and picks up and becomes information. And suddenly, with the new changes that we're able to access, once we come into contact with these frequencies, anyone can do it. You can't sit at home alone and ohm it in. It's not the same thing as, you know, Jonathan so-and-so was doing 40 years ago. It seems to have hit the planet now, but as you interact with these frequencies, you begin to carry them.
Yeah.
Therefore, usually what happens at the seminars, what we do is on Friday nights, we do demonstrations of the healings for people, explain the background, the scientific research behind it, let people feel them and show how it physically affects the body. I mean, you can see it visibly. That's why all the scientific research has been going on with the reconnection, with reconnective healing, because of the changes that they see in the brain, in the heart, in the energy, in the gamma radiation,
mm-hmm.
and in the virtual immediate healings that happen not every time, but very, very often.
Let's let our listeners know, first of all, before we go any further here, my guest is Dr. Eric Pearl. He's the author of The Reconnection, Heal Others, Heal Yourself. Website address that you have that people can go to get further information about the book, your work, as well as the seminars.
It's actually the same title as the book, TheReconnection.com.
I like it. The Reconnection.
Makes it kind of easy.
That's right. TheReconnection.com.
There's a toll-free number if they want it.
Give it to us.
You have that?
I'm
it's,
ready.
It's 888-ERIC-PEARL. That's 888-ERIC-PEARL. Or the numbers are actually 888-374-2732.
All right. 374-2732. And before we wrap up, we'll give that out again. Now, I have been going to a chiropractor on and off for the last, I guess, 10, 12 years or so.
You know that this has nothing to do with chiropractic.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay,
however,
good.
It doesn't have anything to do with chiropractic, and yet at the same time, I have found in my own musings about it that if the body, I mean, the body's made up of so many different systems, but when we talk of chiropractics in particular here, whether we talk of Reiki as energy healing or any other modality, we talk about two main structures, the skeletal and the musculature, and that the skeletal structure is bound together by the musculature, and if the skeletal structure is out of whack, the muscles tend to go in the direction of the skeleton. So if you put the system back in alignment, well, let's talk about the alignment of our own energy in our own bodies, because we are electromagnetic machines, if you will, beings, as well as spirit beings. I mean, there's so much going on here. We talked about five dimensions or four dimensions, and I'm wondering how many others there really are.
Well, first, oh God, you do so many things. I mean, I could go on an hour in that one question that you flipped around on. First of all, of course the body is electromagnetic. That's how chiropractic heals.
Yeah.
Although the majority of chiropractors have forgotten what it's about, and you can recognize those because their ads start with the word pain somewhere in them. The first chiropractic patient was death. Did you know that?
Give that question to me again.
The first chiropractic patient was death. Chiropractic is not about pain. And D.D. Palmer, who originally discovered chiropractic, saw this guy. His name was Harvey Lillard. He was a janitor in 1895. And September there, D.D. Palmer adjusted his neck 3 days in a row, found a bump on his neck, and kind of clicked or popped it back in. And the person regained their hearing. So Palmer thought he discovered a cure for deafness. So word got out, and people were coming in on covered wagons and everything else, all to Davenport, Iowa, from all over the country. And deaf people are coming in, and a lot of them are regaining their hearing, and some of them aren't. But they're healing from other things, mm-hmm. and that's when they realize by freeing up the vertebrae in the body, you take the pressure off of the nerves, the electromagnetic and other and life force transmissions from the brain throughout every cell of the body, and the body heals.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to a chiropractor who's doing lots of physical therapy and electrical stuff on you and maybe a little bit of an adjustment, you are going to one of the chiropractors who have gotten suckered into the concept of wanting it to be about pain, because we are a society of pain.
Mm-hmm.
The chiropractors who know to free something up and let the body heal itself, that's healing. The only difference between that and reconnective healing work, what we do is we are working now off the body, and I teach this work to medical doctors and chiropractors and nurses and osteopaths.
Mm-hmm.
Over 14,000 people we've trained internationally. The book is now in its ninth language, its 10th printing in the U.S., and approximately 25% of those 14,000 people are doctors and nurses, and this is done in hospitals and in private practices, as well as in home by lay people.
You talk about the healing, and we talked about this at the front end of the program, that you don't want to control what's being done with it. You want to send it out there and have that person use it in the way that they would see fit. But that's your mentality, or mine, let's say. But that's not necessarily the attitude of the individual who is seeking the healing. I want to be healed of this thing.
But does that mean you want to lessen what you're able to bring to them by coming to their level of consciousness?
That's another good point.
So the best way to bring this about, and the most important way to deal with anyone in any health arena, is called patient education. Talk to them and explain. I know that when people would come in to see me in private practice, and I teach this to my people, the first thing I say is, if you are a medical practitioner, you're probably negligent mm-hmm. if you don't diagnose.
Mm-hmm.
In this work, you're negligent if you do. The more you think you know about the person, the more your conscious, educated mind is going to try to get in the way to direct it, led by the charge of ego. Look what I did.
Yeah.
So I tell people when they come in, there's no way to cover your ears and eyes and say to the person coming in to see you, I don't want to know what's wrong, because that's so out of their reality
mm-hmm.
that they won't be comfortable.
Yeah.
So what I suggest is they let you know the main purpose that they've come in. That should take all of about 8 seconds for them to say, I've got fibromyalgia, I can't get up in the morning or something. And then right following that, I usually let them know, at that point I say, now, you might just want to lie down and relax as I begin to explain what this is, and then let you close your eyes to have the session, because I want you to know that no matter whether you tell me everything, anything, nothing, or make up a lie about why you're here, the same healing will be the healing that you receive. I can't make any promises or guarantees, but you'll either, hopefully, you'll receive the healing that you've come here for. And if you're truly fortunate, you'll receive a healing you didn't even think about, one that the universe has in mind for you that's even better than the one that you thought of.
Exactly. Well, Dr. Eric Pearl, I want to thank you very much. I wish we could go on for another hour. Maybe we'll have you back again to talk more about the reconnection, healing others, healing yourselves. The website address, once again, is thereconnection.com, and your phone number, 1-888-ERIC-PEARL or 1-888-374-2732. And Dr. Eric Pearl, once again, thanks for joining us. And
thank you for having me.
And much success to you. And we look forward to hopefully maybe visiting you when you come into the valley.
That'll be great.
All right.
Okay.
I'm Richard Dugan. Thank you for joining us here on the program.
Yeah.